if you force something artistically that's not really coming from where you want to do it from, it's going to flop.
Welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your all-access pass to the music industry. I'm your host, Matt Landry, and every week we immerse you in the music world, uncovering industry insights, offering expert guidance, and exploring the stories that influence the industry. Cloud Machine Podcast is brought to you by Aites, the innovative creative agency behind some of your favorite live concerts and tours. Want to take your music to the next level? Join our vibrant community on the Aites Network Discord. And with that, let's get started with today's episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. Today's topic of vocal and performance coaching is crucial for anyone that's looking to refine their musical skills in the industry. It's not just for vocalists or front person, but also for musicians, musical directors, and anyone who is looking to improve their overall sense of musicality and stage awareness. Joining us today, her expertise is Marla Joy, a renowned vocal and performance coach with over a decade of experience working with internationally recognized artists on their recordings, live shows, auditions, portfolios, and a multitude of other projects that we're going to get into. Hi, Marla. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Thanks for joining us today. Where are you coming from today? Where are you at?
I'm coming from the place that I spend the majority of my time. I'm coming from my studio, where I do all my coaching.
Cool. I'm coming live from Edmonton. just for the listeners, a little bit of context with the beaches this weekend. Sort of some surprise shows at the Stanley Cup Finals game, which is a dream of mine as a hockey boy, hockey kid. So I was stoked about that. But anyway, let's start the podcast that we always start the podcast. I wanted to ask you about your favorite live show experience as a fan.
It's tough when you're on the other side. Okay. I think I've seen a lot of artists that I love live.
Yeah.
But I think the one that probably had me the most acting like a 15-year-old girl lunatic jumping up and down was a festival called Desert Fest, and it actually was coined, it was in the Coachella Valley, and it was literally coined Old Cella for us old people. Yeah, what the youngins called it. It was in the Coachella Valley. My husband and I went, and the lineup was it was 3 days, and it was Neil Young, Bob Dylan, Rolling Stones, The Who, Paul McCartney.
Wow.
No, it was insane. It was insane.
Okay, Oh, please go ahead.
Yeah, that one as a fan. I mean, my husband jokes around that like he literally lost me at certain points because like it's the same audience, it's the same field as Coachella, but like, you see people, I had actually seen a lot of them already live. Who I hadn't seen live was the Stones.
Yes.
And when it's like, you know, the size of Coachella and the screen and the stage, and it's like, ladies and gentlemen, the Rolling Stones. And then all of a sudden it starts blaring and Mick Jagger, like, just get, and my husband jokes, right? He's like, you jumped. Like I jumped and like flew to the front. It was like one of those crazy Beatles fans, like back in the 60s. Like I flew. And as a fan, that whole festival for me was like, I was
I'm sure.
Well, yeah, it was crazy. It was incredible. Yeah.
When was this?
This was, so we had just had our son. We waited a year to go away because that's the first kid thing that you do. Second kid, you don't. But we waited a year. I think he was like 14 months. He's 9. So that was like,
okay, wow.
It was a solid bit ago, but
yeah,
it was like once in a lifetime, incredible.
Amazing. I mean, just the acts that you mentioned is some of my all-time favorites. I haven't seen some of them yet, but especially Neil Young, especially.
Neil Young singing Harvest Moon while the Harvest Moon was coming up behind him in the valley.
Yeah, wow.
It was a life changer.
Fantastic. For those of our listeners who don't know you, what is the project slash artist, slash tour maybe, that you've worked with or on that would best represent what you do, your work?
So, interestingly enough, I work with a lot of artists that people have seen shows of and have gone to tours for.
Yes.
And a lot of those artists live in different genres. A lot of them are rock. A lot of them are pop rock. A lot of them are alternative. A lot of them are pop punk. A lot of them are R&B. Like it really kind of like goes all across the gamut. But I can I think that every single show that I work on and every single tour that I work on with my artists represent how I work and what I do. Do you know what I mean? Like,
fantastic. Yeah.
Right. Like there's no one specific one where I'm like, oh, well, this is the one where I really come through and it's represented. Like everything I do with my artists is really getting them to be as confident and authentic on stage as possible. So me seeing every show, whether I'm on site or whether I'm like, we always joke around that when my artists are on tours, I go scrolling because I'm looking at like every bit of footage I can find to make sure everything's good. But yeah, I feel like, you know, when I'm watching different parts of a show and I kind of like will like laugh to myself, like, oh, I remember us talking about that moment. You know what I mean?
Before that,
like really thinking of a moment, you know, like where can we really get what this song is about across, like where can we really, so there's moments in everyone's show that I feel represent what I do, because really my end game is just to have them be as real and authentic and connect with as many people as possible.
That's fantastic. And that just shows as well, like the your process is not necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily, yeah, yes, it's self-fulfillment, but it's also just working with those artists on them becoming themselves too, right? It's not like you don't have, you may have some references, but the end goal is to make them more themselves and to make them a better, you know, vocalist or performer.
Exactly. But it's also to have them truly not think about the vocal. I know that's
not something
a vocal coach would normally say, but I don't want them to think about their vocal for one. And I, you know, oftentimes people, I'll say like, I'm kind of like the anti, I'm the wrong vocal coach to ask certain questions. The last thing that I say to my artists, whether I'm on site, warming them up, whether I'm on Zoom, whatever it is, after we do all of that, the last thing I will say to them is fuck your vocal. Now get out there and just fuck the vocal. Like,
yeah.
Just feel. That's it. You know?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. You're good. On the podcast, we do a quote segment for the listeners. Last year was an Erykah Badu quote comparing the music business to music as an art form and how they're different. They're the same, some, you know, different perspectives on that. This year we have Joni Mitchell, her quote from 2004, which is, for context, 20 years ago. She says, I heard someone from the music business. Now, this is somebody else is saying this. She said, I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. I want to know what your first instincts are about this.
Twofold. My first instinct is, it's sad. That's sad. My second instinct is to actually say, I think that's changing. I think 20 years ago, it very much stood true.
Yeah.
In this day and age, for a multitude of reasons, that people are looking for artists that they can connect with and that they know aren't bullshit and that they know aren't putting on a performance or putting on a character. I think that even, you know, I know we'll get into this later, but even as far as labels go, it's just, it's not the same world anymore. And I think that the people that are consuming art and the people that are listening to the music and connecting to the artists are not looking for people who will just be willing to cooperate and, you know, fit the bill that the mold that it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand also that in that day and age, I can understand why Joni would have said that. And we also got so many incredibly talented artists from 20, 30 years ago, obviously. And I could see why, she would have said that, because a lot of it was, you know, how do you look and how do you sound and your vocal, and what do you look like? And are you willing to do, like, there was a lot more mystery back then in terms of who the artist actually was and
yes,
what they were singing about in their stories and their life, which again is kind of a double-edged sword, but I feel like works for the artist now is why I believe that it's changing, because of the way that the music industry, or not even the music industry, that artists are living right now. They're really able to have people that are fans of them and fans of what they make and fans of their art and fans of what they stand for. And it's not about anything else, really.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I feel like artists and mostly fans, they're the ones that are empowered now. You know, in this quote, she says, I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent, but now in 2024, it doesn't matter what the industry is looking for. It really is all about what the fans are looking for. And, you know, because they're so empowered with TikTok and things like that, labels sign now because of what the fans want. It's not like, oh, the labels know what is going to work and then they're going to feed the audience. It's actually the audience informing the people. So it's a completely different dynamic there. And I think, like, with artists, when it's like that, artists can take more chances in a way of being more authentically themselves.
Absolutely. So
you spoke to characters as well, where it's weird where artists can be more themselves, but they also have the space to explore what that identity is as well, with like artists now with like Chapel Roan specifically, or like the Charlie XCX's of the world, where it's like they're always it's character stories basically. But still being authentically themselves. It's like a whole thing.
100%. And I think that, you know, look at some of the greats that came out of, you know, if you look at the Whitney Houstons and you look at the Mariah, like if you look at like the old school mold, it probably was very much, can you just cooperate and stand where you need to stand and sound the way you're supposed to sound? And it gets such iconic artists.
Of course.
But imagine how much they were not allowed to share. Imagine how much they weren't allowed to, I mean, I don't know for a fact, but, you know, were they allowed to write songs about their deepest, darkest, real moments and then tell their audiences that they went through it? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was such a different mold. And it's exactly what you said, that it used to be the labels that would find, or the industry that would find the artist and tell the fans, this is what's next. Like, this is the next thing. And now literally the fans and the public telling the labels what's going to pop off.
Yes. Yeah. I love
and
that.
A lot of the times, I can't believe I'm saying this. Again, not the right
place.
99% of the time, guess what it's not about? It's not about the voice.
There you go. What do you think it's about?
I'm going to quote, I back in the day when I started out, I used to have these workshops because a lot of the artists that I worked back then were not necessarily at a professional level. And I used to hold these workshops, and because of my past in the industry, a lot of great people and so many amazing people would come out.
Yeah, sure.
One thing that Craig Mannix, watching Big C, he said, you know, at a label, we say, so you can sing. So what? 1%. Sure. The vocal aspect comes from me in terms of, I want you to be healthy on the road for 130 shows. I want you to be able to have this insane schedule and not think, oh my God, I'm losing my voice. I can't count on my voice. I never want you to even have that thought. And I want you to be able to understand and learn how your voice works so you can get it to make the sounds you want it to make, and then to have your art grow as a result.
There you go, yeah. Yes, you know? Yeah.
But in terms of the actual, you know, it used to be all about, remember, like back in the Christina Aguilera, it was like the vocal and the riff and the
vocal. Yes, the Mariah Carey. Yeah.
Right? And there's no, you can't knock Mariah Carey or Christina Aguilera. But the point is that right now I feel like the one positive thing in this music industry is that it's never been more important and more of a true craving for people when they find artists to have them be as real and as authentic as possible. And I love that.
Fantastic. Just wanted to ask a quick question, generally because of interest. Are you seeing some new developments right now in the industry that you're interested in? We're talking about Christina Aguilera, Mariah Carey, what's going on? What happened? Are you seeing some new things that you're interested in? Maybe that aren't, you know, on in the mainstream, but maybe on the precipice of becoming like in the vocabulary.
Are you speaking about like certain artists or certain?
Maybe certain artists, maybe certain trends or things that you're seeing, maybe even on the vocal side of things, like how that's changing.
The trend which we just spoke about is one of them for sure, and I love it. I love that it's about people really wanting to connect with artists as people, you know, and their art being something that is so real, and their performances, you know, being something that's just like 100% authentically them. I personally love that change of, you know, it used to be a mold. It used to be kind of, you had to sing like this, look like this. Here was the age cut off. Here was the, you know, whatever it was.
Yes.
How you can be 40 something and, you know, come out with a debut album that you've been chilling and working on in your basement that popped off, whether it was from, you know, doing live shows or whether it was from socials, that people connected with, not because you were the cookie cutter of what it used to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that. I really love that. And I also think from a vocal kind of standpoint, and again, I know it sounds strange for a vocal coach to say this, but I really love the trend of not having a lot of over singing anymore. I think that, again, there was always this like, well, how high can she hit the high D in her mix? And can she belt? And can she riff? And can she? And it's all not to, I'm not knocking any of it. Like, I was a girl that, you know, at 10 years old sat in my bedroom in front of the mirror and had to like match every Aretha lick for lick. And she's still one of my favorite artists on the planet. But I feel like there was so much emphasis just put on, you know, it's like these shows, like The Voice, and again, not knocking them because it gives people a platform and an opportunity, but it's like, it's not just about The Voice anymore.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
I love it because people are such brilliant songwriters and people are such brilliant musicians and people have such amazing bands and people have such amazing energy and such cool messages and like you know, we've all been through shit, but like to be able to come out and express that now and have it be okay to express that, I think is really what music should be about. And I think it was back in the 60s, 70s, but then somewhere around the 80s, 90s, 2000s, something took a turn. And I think that we're getting back to more of that. I'm going to sing and say what the fuck I want to sing and say.
You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fantastic. And that, you know, and that starts at the songwriting as well, you know, but having that dialogue between songwriting and the vocal performance is great, you know. Want to get to the core questions that I got here. Can you share with us how you first got started in, you know, vocal coaching, performance coaching, as well as vocal producing as well?
Yeah. So I know this is like the cheesiest, like if someone was saying this on a podcast and I was watching, I'd be like, oh, fuck off. But it's really true. Organically and by accident. Really, it did.
Sure.
I was living in New York for a while and I was doing my own artist thing and I came home for something totally unrelated. I came back to Toronto just, it was really supposed to be for like a few weeks, a month. And okay. I was, that's another, that's a whole other podcast. But so I came home, I came home and I had always myself been so interested in voice, like really interested though, because even when I was like 7 or 8 years old, I remember like when Madonna came out and like I was in like grade 3 and grade 4 and everyone was like freaking out over Madonna. And don't get me wrong, like again, an icon.
Yeah.
But like I was listening to like Elvis. Like it was like I was always kind of like there was something that I liked. Kind of like the more kind of older, soulful, kind of rock. Like I was always kind of in that world. And So I always, like I said, like I would, you know, listen to Aretha songs when I was like 12 and be like, okay, how do I figure out how to do that? Like, I want to be able to do that, you know? And I would watch like my dream was like for someone to just take me to a church and like, let me just stay there and like, listen to a gospel.
Yes. Choir.
I was always really intrigued. And so when I was doing my own thing, I studied a lot about the voice from different coaches that I had trained with. I lived in London for a bit and New York for a bit and in LA. I like worked with a lot of coaches, but I also did a lot of research and a lot of reading and was taking like online courses at Berkeley about voice. Like while I was like, I just wanted to understand it. The more that I would make art, the more I realized that, you know, I wanted my voice to be able to do certain things and I wanted to just understand how it worked.
Right.
When I came home for that break, there was a vocal coach living in Toronto. I'd never thought about coaching, never. And there was a vocal coach living in Toronto that heard I was home for a bit and said, a pretty well-known vocal coach, and said, I would love for you to come in and take on some of my students because she had some stuff going on and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't even like, can I do that? Like, do I need that? And she was like, no, like you'll come into my lessons for a bit. And I just, but I really think that like, you've got it and whatever. And so I did it for a little bit and I fell in love with it. I loved it. I got, as I always say, like I got a bigger high from doing that than I did from doing my own stuff. And which was really interesting. And when she was kind enough to say, like, you know, you should, if people are reaching out to you, you should take on your own artists. Like, you don't have to stay here. Like, you should really do this. I think, you know, you obviously love it and are great at it. And I think you should do it. And so I started taking on artists as like, almost one of those, like, I don't know where this is going. And I never like advertised, I still have never, I'll never right. like advertised for someone. It was kind of all really word of mouth and organically kind of just happened. And I fell in love with it. And when I started to be able to especially for my original, like we're talking like 11, 12 years ago, like the first kind of clients, few clients that I had, one of which is a pretty well-known artist today. It's like when I was able to see the payoff and I was able to see them get to the places that they had worked so hard to get to that we,
yes.
And my husband always asked me, he's like, do you ever sit, you know, backstage at an arena when you're warming up one of your artists and you see like 20,000 people and they're about to go out and you're warming them up? Like, don't you ever get that feeling where you miss it and you want to get out there? And I said, it's not even close. I actually get more, like I said, I feel more of like a high seeing them go out there and do it than I felt for myself. And so as things started progressing and people that I worked with earlier on started making waves, a lot of people that I had known in the music industry from when I was doing my thing kind of started reaching out. A lot of them peers of mine that were like, can I get in with you? And at first I remember I was like, how the fuck am I supposed to coach you? Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, we're friends. Like it was, but that, that started happening. And it kind of grew from there. And so where I'm at now is I don't usually do recreational coaching. I do work with people who are doing it on a professional level just because I only have so much time in a day. But I will say if someone comes along who like just completely inspires me and I think is like wildly cool and amazing and has never done anything in their life, I will take them on because I, if I'm going to spend 7 to 8 hours doing something a day, it's got to be with people who I love and who I'm inspired by. So it all kind of just, it really happened without me realizing it was happening.
Fantastic. Yeah, super great. Some of the best things happen like that, you know?
As you learn, as you continue to grow and live this life, truly that when things are forced, doesn't it in art too?
I want to ask you about you know, some general questions that hit a few different things I'd love to talk about. What are some of the common challenges that you've observed among, you know, I believe it's 12 years of vocal coaching? Are there some common challenges that you see from aspiring singers, professional singers, when it comes to singing?
The common thing for everyone is, and I always say, it's art imitates life imitates art. It's being in their heads so much that affects the ability for the vocal to actually do what it knows how to do. It actually knows how to do it already, you know?
Right.
And so when I've never ever, I say this to my artists all the time when they walk in and they're like, I feel like shit about my voice on this. And I listen to this track back and this show and a fan. I'm like, I have never yet met an artist who has walked in here and been like, so I love my voice. I think I'm super.
Right.
I think all of my songs are amazing. A great vibe. It doesn't, you know, it's like a prerequisite to the art be so political and so in your head about every single thing. And that's all across the board, including myself, every artist that I'm sure you've noticed it as well. I mean,
oh yeah, all the time.
And the key is to turn this off in life and in art, but in terms of vocalists, especially because that tension, which starts in our brains and goes all the way to our bodies. I mean, the one place lands, it's right here, on a level of physical, but also emotional, mental. And so the minute you close up here, so that's the number one, all of us. And getting into that and how I deal with that is another story. But the other thing is consistency.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you know as well. it's, you know, sometimes you get the call from a manager or a label, and it's like, I've got this artist and they've got a tour in 2 weeks. So I was wondering if they could get in with you.
Yes.
And I'm all like, it's not like I'm not going to help, you know what I mean? But it's like, wow, you should have made this call a year or two ago. You know, if you knew that this was coming up on the horizon, that, you know, we always, it's been said very much so in vocal coaching and in the community that it's no different than being an athlete, but it really is true. It's like,
yes, yeah.
You hear that these Olympic athletes train 6 years for 60 seconds, right? It's a muscle. It's no different. And I know that helps, which I say also, it kind of takes the romance out of it. Because I want to say like, oh, you have to be the most, oh, you're so incredibly talented. But at this place in here, it's a muscle.
Yeah.
And you train it and you consistently train it and it gets stronger and it shows up for you and you don't have to think about it.
You know? Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask about, well, you were saying something that, you know, I connect to, but you're saying that like, they're always in their heads about it. Do you feel like a lot of your job is just unlocking that, unlocking just the yes, it's a muscle as well, but just like the mental blocks,
you know,
unlocking that stuff.
You know, as an MD, you have to know, because every MD I know knows it. Okay.
No, of course, it's all there.
It's all there, and 99% of the block is here.
Yes.
And I don't think it's so much unlocking it. I mean, we have joked around for years and years and years about that it's, you know, part therapy session, part vocal, part performance, a little more therapy session. And sometimes there are, you know, obviously underlying things that are weighing on an artist.
Oh, yeah.
It's an industry. I love to be, and I'm sure you do too, because I'm sure you get it. I love to be able to be that person who is just there for the artist. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, don't get me wrong. I love, you know, I get a text or a call from a manager being like, I want to make sure that you guys, you know, jump into this, this, and this, or I want to make sure that you guys touch on this and that. And there's, I love that. But at the end of the day, my job is coach for the artist purely, right? So they can come here and give me everything they need to say and get out, you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we'll go into kind of warming up and doing what we do, and everything's so much more relaxed than it was when they walked in, because, you know, you're not necessarily going to go to someone in the industry and want to go telling them all of these things that are going on. But so
yeah,
part of it is a lot of it is very much that. And the other thing is, I say, I just trick people into making the sounds they didn't know they could say, you know, because it's really that when you turn this off and when you get out of singing mode, everything comes out. And that's what I say to every artist I work with is, don't sing to me. Don't you dare, you know, that we've just warmed up. Don't you dare open your mouth and sing to me. I don't want to hear you sing. I want you to just give me this story. You know, and so
right.
What I do is literally just get people to make the most insane. I'll put them on a set in a movie. I'm like, this is your line. You're playing. You're a Brad Pitt. You're a co-star. Oh my God, you're in love with him. And this is what you say, and that you get. And they'll do it over and over. And I'll be like, so just so you know, that's the note. That pitch that I just had you doing that on, that's the note you can't hit. You know,
right.
But they turned off. Right.
Yes. Yeah, and recontextualizing.
I'm tricking and doing wizardry and rewiring the things that the body can do when you turn off the brain to stop thinking about it. And all of a sudden, then that gives the artist this much confidence at the beginning to go, shit. That is, they don't trust. They always come over to the piano like, no. And they see, yep, it was. And they're like, oh, okay. So then from there, we've got a little more confidence, right?
That's the thing. It's the confidence thing too, right? It's very interesting. You spoke about earlier about just like culturally how the vocal in the 90s, 2000s, culturally it became like this huge thing with artists, but also with like, you know, seeing it on TV, The Voice, American Idol, all these things. And it just like culturally, the voice has always had just a big impact. So people might just always be comparing themselves to the people that they see on TV or things like that. I want to do that, like that person, but physically they might just sound different. Well, I get that. I see that a lot. Well, I want to play like this person. Well, your hands aren't as big as John Mayer. So you, you can't put your thumb over the fretboard like that or things like that.
I literally just had this, I swear on my life, I just had this conversation yesterday with an artist who was talking about Led Zeppelin, ironically enough, and I said, like, you know, there are certain artists, even that I've worked with, who have blown my mind. One of them who really can sing like Plant and Page, truly. But I said, when you get into certain things like Freddie Mercury, there's a handful, you know what I mean? Where you get into the Freddie Mercury's and you get into the Plant and Page, it's like, they really just have that. Freddie Mercury's mouth really was that much bigger, so that exact sound isn't gonna, you know what I mean? But having said that, you can always, because I think that people get this idea of emulating their favorite artists or their mentors, but you actually don't want to. You don't want to sound
correct.
I remember there was a girl, I'm a big Janis Joplin fan, and there was a girl, now her name obviously escapes me, but she played Janis on Broadway in that huge Janis Broadway show, and she also played Janis in Across the Universe, the movie. And she was so,
oh my gosh,
you know what I'm talking about? No,
but that's just the credits there are amazing.
Find it. You might have to Google it. It's something with a D. Yeah. Anyway, she's insane. She's so crazy talented. But what happened is, from doing that show and from doing that part, that was it. So she started doing her own music, and I was a mess because I was just like, oh my God, I love her. But no one, like, it didn't get to where it could have gotten because it wasn't that she was inspired by it, was that she almost was in, it became almost to, not to her and not to me, but to other people, an impersonation, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You don't ever want to sound like, you know what I mean? And, I do remember one artist in particular who was doing a massive charity event, and they had asked this artist to come in and do it. And she's a singer-songwriter, and she's stupid, crazy good. And I'm not going to out it right now, but I will tell you the story. And everyone came out at this sound check, and everyone was doing like these crazy songs, like these like beyond, like vocal riffs and runs and massive event. And we were sitting just kind of chilling, waiting for her turn to go up for sound check. And I had her doing like an acoustic song, no band, nothing, like on a stool.
Yeah.
And she looked at me and she's like, Mar, what the fuck am I doing here? Everyone is Beyonce. And I literally, to this day, I literally looked at her, I said, yeah, and you're Dylan. So get the fuck up there and be Bob Dylan. Do you know what I mean? Like,
nice. Yeah.
Be the Dylan in the group of Beyoncés. And you know who got the standing O that night? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
fantastic.
Yeah. It's a balance, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a balance, and I think that, you know, the voice, don't get me wrong, I work with artists whose voices blow my mind, and it is super important because that's who they are. But it has to come from a place of, like you said, if your thumb's not, your hand isn't as big as John Mayer's, do you? You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. Yeah.
You.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Wanted to note that the actor that plays Janis is Dana Fuchs, I believe.
Yes, it is.
Yes, yeah, fantastic. We were speaking about different individuals and things like that. How do you approach developing like a personalized vocal plan for the people that come in and seek your coaching? Are there specific techniques or exercises do you find the most effective in addressing like common things, but like there's other people that need other different things kind of thing? Like how do you approach?
There's no developing... one size fits all. And I've talked with different artists who I guess have had different experiences where it was like, well, don't you just, and to me, that's so sad and mind blowing because the first thing I need to do is I need to get to know the artist. I need to vibe with the artist. I need to understand like, okay. And again, I know you can relate to this too, because it's like, I need to figure out what makes you tick? What's your vibe? Where are you? You know what I mean? Some people are super outgoing. Some people are super held back. Some people are, you know, you can tell are like super A type. Some people are, you know, need to be perfect, or terrified of making a mistake. Like, it's like, you need to get an understanding of who you're working with.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, yes. And like, just knowing what, even like for me, typically working on the live side, it's like, okay, what are they like day of show? Are they going to be nervous? Or are they going to be, you know, confident about it? What do they need beforehand? What's the vibe with the whole thing? And then like in the show development world, it's all about knowing that the artist, because it's what they want. I'm the only thing I'm doing is basically bringing out what the artist wants.
Boom. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
See, MD vocal coach done. Do it. But that really is true, right? Because you can't approach any person, forget music. You can't approach any person, like you can't have the same conversation and the same tone and the same, like everyone's different. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yes. So it's like, okay, I got to figure out here, like, am I going in, like, am I really easing into this and kind of like, I'm going to really step back and kind of do it this way? Or am I like, no, no, I see where I've got to go here with this person. Same thing before warm-ups on day of show. Is this a person that before a day of show wants to be alone for an hour before? So I'm going to tell their manager, okay, if you're scheduling that warm-up, please make it 2 to 3 hours before. Even if it's like, well, what do you mean? They're going, and I'm like, no, give them, you know what I mean? Like it's,
yeah.
Need to bring out and be of service to the artist to get their best performance out. And for me, so I need to really get to know, and that happens pretty quick. Like, I feel like we can understand, you know what I mean? Like, because we've done it for so long, it's like, we get a vibe for like, okay, I get kind of where this person or where this artist is living and where they're coming from. And then you get, you know, you listen to their music, you listen to lyrics, you listen to inspiration, you get a better idea, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I always just, from an actual anatomical, like vocal standpoint, obviously need to listen to where they're at, but I won't do it in a way that's like, let's do exercises. I'm going to do these with you. I mean, I definitely do that once we're in it. But off the top, I'm like, give me your... you know, what's the song, I'll always say, what's the song that you love so much, that you wish you wrote, that you, every time you go to sing it, you're just like, fuck, I can't sing it. I can't hit it. I can't do it. And they'll tell me and I'll be like, hey, that's what we're going to do today. And they'll be like, what are you talking about? Like, literally, I'm like, I want to prove to you.
Yes.
First off the bat. So you can trust me to know when you walk out of here after the first time we meet, that I'm gonna get you to where you want to be.
Also, it wouldn't be fun if everybody was the same.
It would be in life and in art, right? Absolutely not. I love, like, you know, and my favorite is when someone's been pegged as having like a weaker vocal and they walk in and I'm like, watch what we're gonna do right now. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
But also embracing, like you said, you know, the big belty crazy vocal was such a, you know, benchmark. Whereas now, and I always say, like, you want to paint with all the colors. You don't want to just stay in one lane vocally. Like, you want to give people all the emotion that you can, but like, let's embrace the softer. Let's embrace the more intimate. Let's embrace so that when you do go harder, you know, you're giving that much more, more dynamic to your show, right?
Yeah. Fantastic. I wanted to ask you a fun question about some myths or some misconceptions about singing that you often encounter. You know, we talked briefly about some of you, the artists that you work with. Maybe they're like, oh, I can't hit this note, but then you go to the piano and they can, and things like that. Are there general misconceptions or myths that you often see?
Yeah. The first one is that it should take a lot of effort. It should be very, very, not difficult, but it's like people thinking that it's so hard, especially when you speak of pitch, but oh, the higher I go, the harder it gets, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest misconception, because the more effortless the artist feels, the better it is sounding. It's not even about the vocal health. I mean, vocal health, yes, 100%, but the better it is sounding. And the second that I get the artist that turns around and goes, wait a second, that can't be right. That was too easy. I didn't hit it. And I'm like, oh, you belted that. Yeah, you did. And they're like, no, that didn't feel. So there's this misconception of like, if it feels easy, I can't be giving it.
Right.
When it's complete opposite. It has to feel easy and effortless for you to be giving it as big as you want to give it or as much as you want to give it. I think that's a really big misconception. And the other one always seems to be that, everyone thinks they suck, and that just goes across the board, right?
Sure.
An artist comes in and doesn't think they're complete garbage. But the other one I think is that I want to be able to hit these high. I always hear that. I want to be able to hit these higher notes. I want to be able to.
Do something.
But I'm scared to hit that. So I, you know, go into a smaller voice, or I'm hitting it in my head right now because I'm scared to hit that.
Yeah.
And again, once we kind of break through this area of like turning this part off of it and showing them with whatever crazy vocal exercises I will make them do, that they can hit it, and that not only can they hit it, but it feels so easy to hit it. And not only that, but their throat's not burning, feeling like it's going to bleed after they finish a show. It's like, oh, that's how it's supposed to, like, I'm not supposed to be like running for the tea and honey after the show. It should be
fantastic.
Easy.
Yeah, it should be easy. Yeah. I want to talk to you about the performance, more on the performance side and the live side of things. Although, you know, we've just been talking about all of it. I want to ask you about what role does stage presence play in enhancing a vocalist's performance? How you work with artists to develop a compelling like stage presence.
I think that, I mean, even just as a fan, forget as a coach, the artists that I love, you know, I'll go and they're definitely not thinking about choreographed, you know, positions to put, they're giving, you know, their heart, their soul, their guts, their story, their everything. And so I like to think of performance as, you know, we definitely go into the use of your stage and how to use a stage, but it doesn't come from a place of choreographed. It doesn't come from a place of thinking, you know, of what they'll look like doing it. It comes from a place for me of your goal here is to connect with as many sets of eyes and people as you can. So where do we have to move on this stage to get that to happen? You know?
Yes.
Intentional movement. You don't have to move if there is no intention behind that movement. Like, if you are going to walk stage left, it's because you want to talk to all of those people over there and you want to fuck it. You know what I mean? And if you're going to walk stage right, it's because you haven't talked to those people over there, you know? And if you want to come to the front of the stage and like lean forward and just give her, but that's because you want to be able to get as close to those people as you can. And so for me, connection comes first. And then after that, again, it also depends on the show. Like I prepped an artist for the Junos, which is different than prepping an artist for a festival, which is different than prepping an artist for, you know what I mean? It depends on where, what show you do, right?
Right.
So for that Junos show, there was probably more of start with connection. Okay. There, here are all the people all over here. So we got to get to them all. But there was probably a little more of a polished kind of refinement, like, you know, the bit, the drums hitting here. It'll never be like, for me at least, it'll never be like a, it'll never be that. But like the drums hitting here, you know, the drums hitting here, turn around and boom, with them. You know what I mean? Like, because I find that those movements that are in kind of, in line with the music and in line with the musicians and in line with your lyrics, that's what works. You know what I mean? So for that show, for example, this artist had never even performed on a stage live like that before. And when we started, it was here, you know?
Yeah,
and I remember walking to Juno's after and I was like, I was freaking out because it was just like, I was like, babe, just vibe. Like, just go back to where you were when you wrote this. And think about what you were feeling and what, and so we kind of, I let them do that and we videotaped it. And then from that, we refined it, but it was a natural, authentic thing, you know?
Yes.
So for me, just that, again, it goes back to being real. It goes back to being authentic and just not thinking of it. I always say, like, don't think of it as a performance. It's not about you always. It's not about you. It's about what are you giving? People need to connect to something. Give them something to connect to, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, we definitely go through when is time that we could put like a good banter kind of here. When could we talk about this? What's a good moment to, you know, bring it down for a second? What's a good moment to really go hard? But it's never too choreographed in every sense of the word.
That's fantastic. How can leveraging the expertise of a vocal coach, performance coach, musical director, performance, you know, vocal producer, contribute to an artist's growth and longevity in the music industry?
Everything about every single role that you just mentioned, yourself included, can add to the longevity of an artist. I once had it said to me that you need to find your champions, and I still believe that. Who are your champions? Who's in your, who's got you? You know what I mean? And everyone from your MD to your coach to your band to the people you write with to, you know, everyone that's on your team, championing you and being there on every level. For me as a vocal coach, of course I'm there vocally. Vocally, what I do is I give people the tools to understand how to perform hurting themselves. I give them the tools to be able to withstand 150 dates in a year and come out of it and say, I could record an album right now. Like, I feel amazing, you know?
Right.
So obviously, that's one obvious aspect of it, right? Is just the vocal health. The other part that I love, that's one of my favorites, is that as you learn how to do different things with your voice and how to get to different places with your voice, your albums change as you go because you're able to do things and write differently than you used to, where it's been said to me before, well, when I wrote this, I wrote it because that's where I could sit. Do you know what I mean? And then like, three albums later, I'm like, remember when you thought you couldn't, but now, like, it's like your actual art evolves with it, right?
Yes.
That's massive. I mean, I've worked with MDs left, right, and center, and there would be no live music or shows without them. So kudos to you and everyone else who does it, because I think that people may not realize that you see the artist and you see the band, but wow, do you not know about the people behind the scenes who are taking care of the things, like how much time does this artist need before a show? Have they warmed up before? You know what I mean? Like, so that out there and is able to give you their best, you know, consistency, you know, they can do a year, they can do, you know what I mean? They can stay in good vocal health, and they can walk off feeling really good about what they're doing, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that it's key to have those people surrounding you in order to have longevity in this industry.
Totally. Great answer. It's hard, sometimes harder, especially in Canada, to get a big camp out of that. And I could talk forever about that. Maybe for another podcast. I wanted to ask you about something that you touched on briefly about how from album to album, from let's say campaign to campaign, some things might change in the way artists maybe look at their voice, look at their performance. I wanted to ask you about the versatility of some vocalists today, and if there's an importance to being versatile as a vocalist nowadays, and if there are specific techniques or skills that you would recommend vocalists focus on developing now in 2024.
That's the first one you just like kind of stumped me for a second, because now,
in a good way.
And no, yes, good for you. I don't know what it says for me.
I don't know if it's a good thing, honestly.
No, because you know what? I think of, like in 2024, how does it differ? I mean,
right.
Every artist, every human should be versatile, right? Like we should all be able to practice being open-minded and practice versatility. Just across the board. I feel like it depends on what the artist wants to do and the artist's directions. For example, let's say that an artist has this vision to do a really straight pop album. You know, there are certain vocal techniques that I know right away I'm going to need to teach, right?
Yeah.
Like, no. I'm in like my sad person singer-songwriter era. I know there's a different set of techniques that I'm going to focus on. I'm in my punk era. Okay. Total different set of techniques I'm going to focus on there, right?
Yeah, sure.
So I think that needing to understand where the artist's project is at, for me, is a big one before I go into kind of deciding what techniques I'm going to really dig into there, you know? I think that it's really scary for an artist. From experience, I've seen my artists who will do one album and it does really well, and, you know, do another album in that vein and it does really well, and on the third one, they want to change it up. And everyone's like, you know, if they're... every industry is like,
managers.
Don't change, you know? Like, don't do that. And I back it completely, because again, I think that if you force something artistically that's not really coming from where you want to do it from, it's gonna flop. It is. I don't care if the other two did well, it's gonna flop. Your heart's not in it, it's gonna flop. Look, your heart could be in it and it could flop too. Like, no one has the formula for this industry. If they did, it wouldn't be this industry. But I think that you're more likely to connect with people authentically from something that's really coming from you. I think that there are certain vocal techniques that kind of run across the board. It doesn't matter what type of music you're doing. Are you going to make me do them? Can I just tell you
that? No. You don't need to.
Fuck, are we doing a lesson?
No.
There are certain things that are just like X plus Y equals, you know what I mean? So it's like, we know we don't want our vocal cords smashing against each other. And when you're dealing with punk, especially, like, I have one band that I work with that's like punk screaming, and I have to teach them how to do it in a way where it sounds the exact same, but they're not smashing their vocal cords against each other. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or that we want the vocal cords to close. We want them to always just be nice and closed, and we want them to be vibrating, and that goes across the board. We want a little narrow air stream of air coming through. We don't want too much air coming pushing through. So, like, there are certain things that it doesn't matter your genre, like it goes across the board. And so there are certain techniques that you work on in order to get that coordination and to get that chord closure, which are two really important ones. And I think, and then there's breathing and lower body support, which is another part of it, which I'm sure you must see and hear your artists doing warm up. So you must hear certain things that are happening that are similar, you know, or that kind of like there's a common thread. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah. A lot of breathing exercises primarily most of the time. And, you know, just like quote unquote warming up the vocal cords.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. It's a muscle, right? It's like, it's really no different. And I was the first person back in the day, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not going to even, but if I can say 25 years ago, it'll give you an idea of how old I am. But I was the first person back in the day who used to look around at people, you know, doing their warm-ups and trilling and being like, these people do. Please, give me a break. Pass me another cigarette. Literally. until I realized that, you know, there's something to be said here. It's no different from you wanting to learn a sport. You want to play hockey, you want to be a dancer, you want to be a runner, you want to have a six pack, you want to go and get jacked in your arms, but you can't go once a week. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can see your trainer once a week, but dude, if you don't go back on the in-between days, the muscle is not going to get stronger, right?
Sure.
So it's that same thing when it's like, oh, she's going to tell me to practice. Of course I'm going to tell you to practice. I do personally, I'm not doing it for my own health. I can do it. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to take your money, honestly, and look at you and say, you just need to see me once a week and nothing else, and your life will be changed.
Right.
You need to be able to strengthen the muscles and create that. It's all muscle memory. It's like any other sport, any other physical act, any muscle, they're muscles.
That's right. That's right. You know? And, you know, we often speak about like muscle memory. It's a very common term, but like practicing so much that it gets to muscle memory, like that's where the longevity is. That's the repeatability of it. And you're saying as well, going up there and not thinking about your vocal, that's all about muscle memory.
You want your musicians to not think about what they're playing. You want them to just be able to vibe out there. And it's the same thing. I don't want you to think about what you sound like. Are you kidding? I don't even want you to know you. I just, you know, like,
go out
there and just have that experience and that connection.
Yeah. And that's also why, I don't know, this is maybe an industry inside. And I mean, this podcast is all about that, but. That's why you typically, as an audience member, may want to go see a tour halfway through the tour and not at the beginning of the tour or things like that. Or like, you know, I would try to go see an artist, you know, oh, if it's in the middle of the tour, oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
If it's at the beginning, you know, there still might be
things. There's definitely...
Not even from a performance perspective, but even like technical or like, you know, the crew might not be as swift as they should be or something, or like things like that.
But it becomes a machine. It becomes a well-oiled machine, right?
Exactly.
Right? That like those first few, again, not necessarily about performance or vocal or that or whatever, but oh, we didn't realize that. Like, I had that once with an artist that was doing something, and I was like, why? I was at the show and I was like, why is there so much time? I mean, to me, it was so much time. It was seconds, but still, I was like, why is there so much time in between these songs right now? I couldn't figure out what was happening. I was so stressed.
Yeah.
And I was speaking to their team after, and I said, like, what? And they were like, no, we didn't realize. And then fixed it afterwards. But they were using strings and they didn't realize that the strings had to get off in order for them to get it. And it was just an oversight of like, wow, we didn't take those 4 or 5 seconds into consideration. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so stuff like that, exactly, where, you know, all of a sudden, once you've done it a few times, it becomes this well-oiled machine that you can just go out there and not think about it, you know? Yeah.
Fantastic. I want to ask, this is a sort of, we spoke about 2024. And when I think about 2024, and we talk about it all the time on the podcast, is social media and stuff. I want to ask you about... I just want to ask you about social media and your role in that, and if there are artists that come to you and be like, and ask you about how can I like better my vocal so I can like become bigger on socials and like things like that, or like leveraging socials. Obviously socials are like a big part of an artist's career now. And are you seeing some things or doing something differently because they want to sing to their iPhone in their kitchen or things like that?
Yeah. So every artist has their own take on socials right now. And we've kind of like, without really talking about the topic, we've kind of covered it already, but in such that someone who I'm Julian, who's a manager, spoke on a panel during CMW, and I loved what he said. And I've always kind of, that this has kind of been my stance on it, is that, you know, I'm sure that we hear every artist saying, I don't want to have to create content. I just want to make music. Why is everything reliant on my socials? And why, you know, it's hard. And it's, yep. And it is, you know, when you're on a tour and you're doing radio and you're doing press and you're doing shows and you've got to also stay on top of your social, like, it's just like, and for up and coming artists are like, how do I do it so that I hit? How do I do it so that I go viral? And I'm like, well, first of all, you don't want to go viral. I know every person at a label watching me hates me for saying that. But I believe that, not like you don't want to get a lot of people, but you want to build a real fan base. You know what I mean? You want to build not people who are like, oh yeah, that's that song that went viral and like, I've never watched another video of theirs, you know?
Yeah.
That so often. And it's different. One song goes viral and then another one and then another video. Okay, that's a different story, but you don't want that big one viral thing, you know, because that doesn't translate to the listens on Spotify. That doesn't translate to the numbers on the rest of your videos. That doesn't translate to, you know, the interest in you as an artist or the ticket sales that are happening when you go to play a random show in a city that you don't live in, you know, those people that clicked on that viral song, clicking on that viral video. And I feel like socials are, it's kind of this double-edged sword for artists right now, because you know what? A lot of them don't want to do it. A lot of them want to focus on their songwriting and make their music and don't want to deal with it and don't understand how to even, you know, get their head around them doing so much posting and not seeing the results that it then turns them off of it. And they're just like, I don't want to do this. And then there's the other side where it's like, as we talked about back in the day, with the label, you know, you used to record a CD or a tape and send it out to like 7 people that literally could change your life all over the world. And that was it to be in this industry on a level, let's say, where artists would want to be on, like on a stadium level. And now they've been given the power to do that without the label deciding that they're going to be the ones to hit or not hit. They have that power now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's this weird balance. And I think that one artist that I work with really actually made a great point about it and said to me, I know how much artists despise having to go back and do socials and go back and do posts and this and this and that. And this artist said, you know, I'm always playing guitar. I'm always doing this in my room. Like I'm always like, I love, you know, doing these things. And if I can bring people joy and like post it and they're into it too, then cool. Cause I'm doing it anyway. And I was just like, that's kind of a cool way of looking at it because it takes the pressure off of like, okay, how am I going to create this post, you know, like, or how am I going to, what do I need to do exactly? Like, who do I need to follow? Where to get, like, what if you just do it because you're just doing it? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So for me, there are often times where people don't know where to start and I'll say, okay, well, what song are we vibing on right now? Or what song, you know, do you love right now? If you have your own original stuff, like what part of a song are we upset? Like, what do we love on this song? Okay, let's take 30 seconds. I'm going to do it with you and I'll do it with them here. Because then by me being here and by me, you know, taping it and cut and going, okay, it's done. You just got to post it. You know what I mean? Like I'm saying, I don't like the vocal. I don't like the way I sound. Okay, cool. Let's work on it here. You know what I mean? So that when they're done, it's like, oh shit. Okay. I like the way that sounds. Oh, I like the way that looks. I like the way, okay, cool. I'll post it. You know what I mean? So it's definitely now become more of a part of what I do. Mm-hmm. Thinking about even with rollouts for larger artists, I'll still think about stuff with them. What would, you know, this would be hilarious or this would be such a cool idea if we took this and you posted it and it was like, oh shit, that would be a great, you know what I mean? So kind of bouncing it off each other.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely become something that I talk about and that we even do in lessons or in sessions. I mean, before TikTok, it was Instagram. Before Instagram, it was YouTube. Before, you know, one of my artists in particular, who we were taking these cover songs and we were flipping them around into her style. And I remember one time we took like an XXX song. She's a singer-songwriter. And she was like, you want me to, like, what? And I was like, no, this is going to be cool. Try it. And we were posting on YouTube. And that's how she got her management. And that's how she got signed in the States. And it was, you know, so there's always, there's always been some kind of a platform. I think this one is definitely more intense than any other prior years.
Fantastic. I want to wrap up on a few questions. Generally, what advice would you give to an aspiring vocalist who's just starting out and looking to build a sustainable career in music?
Write and don't think about the vocal yet. Write songs. And if you can't write songs because it feels overwhelming to think about writing songs, write stream of consciousness and go back to it later and pick out little points in it and be like, oh, that could be cool. And start writing. And I feel like this has kind of been, I guess, the common thread that has taken us. This may be the one common thread throughout the entire history of the music industry. But to know what your sound is, to know what your sound is, define your sound, like listen, understand why you listen to the people that you love, understand, and sometimes it's different. Sometimes the people that you listen to aren't necessarily the artists that you would want to be. Like I'm the biggest hip hop head in the world. That was, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm not saying it has to be, you know, but understand when you listen to the artists who you think, oh, this is where I want to live as an artist, what is it that you love? You know what I mean? Like, what sounds do you hear? What instruments do you hear? What BPM is it always at? Where are the vocals sitting? What is it about? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And take your own experiences and just tell a story. Don't think I got to write verse, pre-verse, chorus, but like, just tell the damn story. You know, that's your job as the artist. And in most cases that you can bring that into a session and collab with people who will be able to take on the rest of that, you know? I'm so torn on that. It depends how old the artist is, because I don't take on younger artists for a few reasons, but mostly because even if I'm like blown away in the art, like I feel like once you start putting, you know, exercises and training, if the kid is six, I don't want to do that to them yet. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, yes.
I want them to just explore and enjoy music. And like, they're, you know, for me, like, I don't want to have them thinking about or be even conscious or self-conscious. We get enough of that as we grow up, that I don't want them, you know, thinking about how do they sound, what are they doing, their technique, like just go and enjoy music. You know, obviously when you're at a point where you really think, I want to do this, I really want to do this, I would say seek out a vocal coach that can stand on their own reputation. I think that, and you must, again, know there are a lot of people in this industry, and sometimes that can be a really dangerous thing, because people can claim to be the most incredible MD and you give them all this and then it's like, just kidding. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's, it's all about the connections to, you know, getting those references. The word of mouth is always better than just seeing a resume on, LinkedIn, but
that's, right? Or like, if you're seeing a sponsored ad on Instagram and they're like, "I will see your voice in 7 days if you sign up with me," like,
right?
Check them out. Look who they work with. You know what I mean? Like, who have they worked with?
Yeah.
Are they people that you listen to and you're like, "Oh, like I love." What about their own voice? Could you listen to them? Like, oh, I like the way that coach sounds. Like, I'm down with that. You know what I mean?
Sure. I'm sure that's a whole thing. Yeah.
That's a whole other facet to it, you know? And make sure that if you are going to work with a coach, that you've done your research and that they really, you know, it's like when you're an MD, when you're a touring musician, when you're an artist, when you're a coach, you don't need to get a degree specifically that says you are now an MD, you are now a vocal coach, you are now, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you need to know that these people have studied this, have achieved the results that the people that they work with and for want, that they can stand on their own work and reputation. And I would say to seek out vocal coaching for sure, but not unless you really want to do it. And I would say when you're too young, like, not yet, just enjoy. There are actually so many recreational programs in the city that are amazing for kids that just want to like sing and perform, you know, go do that. It doesn't need to get as intense when you're that young, but when you're sure, when you're a little older, I would say definitely seek out a coach.
Last question before we do the game, which is a whole other thing.
Oh boy.
Are there any things that you're looking forward to?
Oh my God, yeah. I can't tell you them though, which is so annoying, but then I'll come back and tell you. I said, I'll come back. And tell you, remember when I said those things, now that they happen, that's what I'm
talking about. Sure.
I have a few artists that are working on new bodies of work that are so, I know it's just so fucking good, but like leveling up from, you know, maybe things that they would have made as an artist thinking, okay, I'm gonna make this album because I'm gonna do what I know people are telling me works, as opposed to like, no, now I'm writing this from like the most honest place I've ever written from. Now I'm working with people like that kind of level up.
Sure.
I have a few songs coming. There are some crazy tours. Some of them have been announced already, but I have a lot of artists that do like, yours, one of them is with you, but doing some amazing tours in the most incredible places, like bucket list tours, bucket list festivals. There's a lot of them. Yeah.
Great. And you know, at the Cloud Machine podcast, we recognize that there's NDAs as well. But just to get excited about what's coming next is exciting.
Well, one thing that I'm looking forward to is, I'm as a coach, but as a fan, but as a coach, but like on Thursday, I'm actually going to, well, it hasn't been determined if I'm working yet. I'll probably end up working, but I am going as a fan. You're going to be there too, actually. I think you're going to be there. I just realized you're going to be there too. Covers for Lovers, because I have four artists on that. And I'm really genuinely so looking forward to that show. I love every artist that I work with that's on that show beyond measure. And I've worked on some of the covers that they're doing that night. And I'm so excited. And I did actually say to one of the people putting it on that, I said, maybe it might be like a group warm-up situation in the back at that point, just because a lot of them are my little babes, but I'm really looking forward to that. Super for that night. I think it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. And so this episode comes out on Tuesday. So for those listening, Covers for Lovers is happening at the Velvet Underground in Toronto on Queen Street. A multitude of artists from Toronto specifically, such as Valley, The Beaches, Erica Fox, who was previously on the podcast, Emily, MBG, a lot more. So and some surprises as well. And Eights is taking part of the production of that.
First and 27th. Yes.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes. That's gonna be great. Wanted to end on the Dream Fest game here. So for those listening, maybe it's your first time listening. Hopefully it's not your last. Maybe it is, but
I hope I didn't make it your last one.
No, it's fine. Basically, we play a few games on the podcast. I thought this week would be fun to talk to Marla Joy about her dream festival lineup, basically. And I know we talked about Old Cella earlier, but
it's not really called Old Cella, all right, Bim? It was called Desert Festival.
Basically asking my guests during the Dream Fest game about their dream festival lineup, as in who would be headlining, who would be the middle act, the opener, so three acts, where it would be, as in what's the city, what's the climate, the time of year. For you, I've added a couple new questions here. In which era? So is it like, are you seeing Willie Nelson, but in in the 1920s or something like that.
Like you can put the artists in a different era.
Exactly. Or you could bring Billie Eilish to the 70s or something.
I would have rethought. That's a whole different story.
And then a few other ones. Food or beverage that would be served at the event that would best represent you? It's a fun question. And lastly, if you could, is there anything that you would change or coach about with one of the performers? Anything that you would change in their approach? So take a little bit of time here, but
I should have written that down.
Okay.
Okay, here's my question.
It's all fun game.
Slash favor, slash question.
Yeah, sure.
Do I have to go, because it's a festival, so do I have to go opening, middle, headline, or can I have act? Like, can I make my festival?
Yeah. You can make
that just change. Okay.
Yeah. No rules.
That just a lot of anxiety off. Okay, so, I have been blessed to see a lot of the artists that I have been inspired by and look up to and think are just fucking incredible. And I've been lucky enough to see them.
Fantastic.
So we're probably going to assume, starting here, that this festival is going to be, they're going to come in from the other side. I don't think they're alive. Okay.
Yeah, sure. That's great.
All right. So I'm going mainly because these are the artists who I love, who I never got to see. I think I have to, right?
Sure. It makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going, well, a lot of them are behind me. Actually, only a few are behind me. So. Hold on.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I am going, Bob Marley is a dream. I love him. I'm going to age myself by telling you that I bought every boxed cassette set in high school and sat in my car and listened to them until 3 a.m. I named my daughter Kaya because when I was 14, I really loved that song. And I swore to myself, if I ever had a girl, that's what I would name her.
Before that's amazing.
No one knew what that name was. Now a lot of Kayas, but back then, no. So Bob, because he's just pure love and joy and calm and happiness, and he's Bob. So he's one of them. Janice, because goddamn, did that woman give me the balls to do so many of the things that I did and not be scared to sing and in turn coach the way that I coach. It's not about a perfect, I hate a clean vocal more than anyone you'll ever meet.
Oh, yeah.
Like, don't want to hear a technically trained sounding pretty vocal. Janice, no question.
Mm-hmm.
So Plant and Page, I want to see Zeppelin as Zeppelin before 77. So that's where Zeppelin fits in. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I mean, really, no one needs to give an excuse. No one needs to give an answer.
Yeah, there's
no reason really needed. But if you aren't familiar, because oh my God, the vibes, the melodies, the musicianship, the vocals, the songs, it would put my jumping at Desert Fest to shame if that was happening. So they would definitely be on the hip hop bill. Jimmy. Again, there's no becauses here. Jimmy,
yeah,
though,
yeah, yeah.
To me, who Jimmy is, to me, because Jimmy, I mean, musicianship, human, swag, person, vibe, vocals, icon, like that just goes without saying. But I will tell you about Jimmy, what for me was really impactful about him, and still is that I was really into rock, but it was never heavy rock. And I was always into soul, but I wasn't listening to gospel. And so for me, Jimmy kind of like was the first artist who introduced me to what it could do to blend it together. Because it was like this soulful rock. Like it had this like oomph to it. And the lyrics and his melodies were soulful, but yet he had the rock and his, I mean, clearly we can't even talk about his guitar playing. That's a whole other story. But Jimmy, because he's just one of the sexiest, most ridiculous artists I think I've ever listened to. That's my lineup. That's my festival. Those are my people.
Amazing.
Those are my people.
Yeah.
That's where we at timeline.
Well, it could be, there's a few, yeah, but timeline, yeah, as in
we're going to live in 71, sure. 71, 72, because 69, it was still new, 74, it was kind of ending, so I'm going to hit right in the middle.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Where is this festival happening?
So, I was going to say Bethel, New York, which is where Woodstock was, and I went to Bethel, New York, and it was the best. We road tripped, my husband and I, before we got married. We road tripped across the coast and we ended up in Bethel, and it was the best. Because I've been there, I'm going to hit somewhere that I haven't been, where you have been recently, where they didn't need a coach on site. Yay for Zoom. But think it might be Red Rocks. I think it might be.
I wasn't there.
Oh, see, that is the worst.
Stop joking. Red Rocks. That one,
I mean, I think there's just something about, and people I know that have been there who are just like, you don't understand. Like when you're there and you're just in the stars and the, well, it's going to be Red Rocks in 72, but it's going to be Red Rocks because I've done Bethany.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The quirky question, food or beverage that would be served at the event that would best represent you?
But the funny thing is that every artist I teach literally like knows this answer because it's get it? It's on my desk. Like, it doesn't leave my desk. It's so ridiculous. So this would just be one of the things that was served because I have an addiction to arrowroot cookies. So there would definitely be a lot of arrowroot cookies. They sit on my desk for release. Okay. And I'm the biggest lightweight on the planet, like a glass of wine and a gun. But I'm obsessed with ginger ale. So I want big glasses of ice, lots of ice, ginger ale, arrowroot cookies, and then the real food, I would want, it's hard because I feel like it's warm out. So I don't want like heavy, like I want burgers, I want fries, I want, you know, like I want like your like festival food. I don't have to crazy, like we're not offering like, you know, specific cuisine. The best burgers, the best fries, maybe some pizzas there. Definitely some candy. Love candy. Ice cream. I'm basically seven. Ice cream sandwich. Most people are probably like, boom, and no. Ginger ale, arrowroot cookies, and give me like all of just like the food that you go to at the baseball game. Like give me the burgers, give me the fries, give me, And if it's very safely stored, I would take a little sushi tent, but I have to be 100% sure that like it's been stored, like we are good.
Last question, the hardest question of the bunch is, if you could, is there anything that you would change about any of the performers? No.
Not a chance. No. Then you're messing with history, and every performer I just named is in my books absolutely perfect, especially on every, you know, last thing I will say, which comes into this, because there was once an interview, and again, it's so different now, but I remember Mick Jagger said, you know, back in the day when we recorded, we didn't have 50 takes. We didn't have, you know, the ability to retake it. When we were doing those three live recordings onto 8-track, we didn't pick the one with the best notes. We picked the one with the most emotion. And let the song stick.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I would never, ever change a thing.
Fantastic. Same for now. Same for what, sorry?
Same goes for now. I'll take emotion over a bum, or I'll take a bum note with emotion over a perfect vocal any day.
Fantastic.
But it's true.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's how we conclude this week's podcast. Thanks, Marla.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun.
Today, we've had the privilege of diving deep into the world of vocal producing, performance coaching, and music industry insights with Marla Joy. From uncovering her journey into the music industry to exploring her methodologies in vocal coaching and performance enhancement, it's clear that her expertise has had a profound impact on, you know, some of your favorite Canadian artists, specifically like The Beaches, there are Kells, and much more. We've discussed the crucial role of stage presence in captivating audiences, debunked myths about vocal coaching, and explored the evolving landscape of music performance. Marla's insights into the importance of versatility and collaboration have highlighted how professionals like her and agencies like 8s are instrumental in shaping the success of aspiring and professional artists. To our listeners, you can connect with Marla Joy and stay updated on her latest projects by following her on Instagram at Marla Joy. MARLAJOY. Also, don't forget to join our vibrant community on the Eights Network Discord. Whether you're a musician, industry professional, or music enthusiast, it's the perfect place to connect with like-minded individuals, gain valuable insights, and access exclusive content. Visit the links in the episode description to join today. Thanks, everybody. Take care, stay safe, and see you next week. Bye. Thank you.